you know, I didn't expect Old Dominion to win, and I think the game kind of went as expected.
The Power Five Conference, they were big. The linemen were big and fast. The skill players were big.
I would say it was exceptional. The buzz in this community, outside of maybe the opening game down in 2009, it certainly rivaled that.
You're inside the Monarch Asylum podcast. Welcome. This is episode 4. Your home for all things Old Dominion football related for the 2015 season. I'm David Agudelo. I'm driving this ship all year long. Once again, this is the Monarch Asylum. You can follow us on Twitter at ODU Asylum. Like the Facebook page. Been getting a lot of more visits on there recently. I do need to add some more stuff to that, but I've been trying to focus a lot on this podcast, trying to make it as good as possible for all of you out there. The voices at the top of the show are our guests, as you hear every week. Batting leadoff will be Brian Parsons, reporter, anchor from Wavy TV 10, Fox 43. We're going to look at the NC State game and what went wrong and what went right. There are some things that went right, even though it wasn't a great game for the ODU faithful. Linebacker TJ Ricks joins the show for the first time this year. Junior linebacker leads the team in tackling. And then finally, the last interview, the last voice you heard is Bruce Stewart, Senior Associate Athletic Director for Old Dominion. A pretty unique interview where we talk about what it takes to make a football schedule and what it takes to put that whole process together. Bruce has been with Old Dominion for 6 years. He's been part of a couple startup programs, and he does quite an interesting job and some really interesting insight there on as far as what it takes, what they look for when they go out and get those teams to come to Norfolk to put on their non-conference schedule. So very, very interesting interview. Definitely one of the more interesting ones we've had this year. To get things started, I do want to say welcome to our first sponsor. We had them a couple weeks ago. We're going to have them again, Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters. It's a small batch coffee roaster located at 2234 Great Neck Road. That's near the intersection of Shore Drive. Only open on weekends, but we have a chance for you to win a $25 gift certificate to Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters, home of some of the best coffee you're going to find all around. Whether by the point or by the pound, great coffee has never been more convenient. You can visit them at lynnhavencoffee.com, or you can email mike at lynnhavencoffee.com. We're going to have a contest. We had one earlier in the year. We're going to revisit that contest. All I need you to do is tweet a picture of where you watched the ODU game this Saturday against Appalachian State. Tweet a picture. Put the hashtag Monarch Asylum on it. The best picture wins a $25 gift certificate. It's pretty easy. Also, if you have any questions for the Monarch Asylum, if you have a guest we'd like you to try and get, if you have a coach you'd like me to try and get, I'm open to suggestions. Just hit me up on Twitter. Once again, that's at ODU Asylum. Or you can leave me a message on the Facebook page. Which just search Monarch Asylum. It's pretty easy. There's only two Monarch Asylums on the Facebook pages, and one of them is a butterfly sanctuary, and the other is this podcast. So if you can't figure out which one is which, you should be able to figure it out. It's pretty easy. All right, let's take a quick look back at the NC State game. 38-14, definitely not the result that anybody wanted. And when you really take a closer look at that game, I guess frustrating is the right word to use, because you look at the statistics and you figure ODU should have been dominated, which they were, but you take a closer look at the statistics and they didn't play that terribly. They just couldn't get out of their own way. For the first time in Old Dominion history, no turnovers, no penalties. For a team to have no turnovers does happen, but no turnovers and no penalties, that shows me this team was focused. They were ready to play. They weren't possibly too overhyped, because sometimes you get a little too excited and that's how you get the easy false start or jump offside. So they were pretty focused and ready to play. But then you look on the other side, fewest yards ever, 148 yards, total yards of offense, and fewest first downs ever in school history, 8 total first downs. There were some bad drops that played into that on the offense, not sustaining drives, only 3 of 12 on third down. But overall, the offense just really could not get a groove at all. They were plagued by some bad issues with field position, being stuck deep and having to work out deep in their zone. I know that's one thing Bobby Wilder always preaches, is trying to make the opposing team drive 80-plus yards to score, and that was the problem ODU was in all day. They couldn't get that break to flip the field position. Of course, the drops didn't help, and the fact that NC State was crunching the box, forcing Shuler Bentley to make the plays to beat him. I mean, Ray Lowry, we all love the baby bull, but you know, only 15 yards this last game. 15 yards rushing, negative 3 yards rushing for the entire Monarchs offense. I got to repeat that, negative 3 yards rushing. NC State came in with a game plan, and I have to say they executed it extremely well. Now, when you look at 38 points, you got to think maybe the defense didn't play well, but I think that's opposite. I think the defense played extremely well, especially when you consider the fact that NC State Wolfpack dominated the time of possession. 40 minutes to 20 minutes time of possession. The Monarch defense was on the field for 79 plays compared to the NC State defense, which only faced 44 plays from Old Dominion. They just got wore down, and that happens, especially when you're playing against a team who's a little bigger than you, probably a little faster, and with a lot more experience. The defense played valiantly. They played their best, but when you're on the field that long, you're going to wear down, and the offense didn't help them out. Like I said, too many three and outs, a lot of key drops, which really hurt the Monarchs as they played in this game. So they're going to need to find more consistency as the season goes on. And they got to make the play that's in front of them. They got to make that easy play. The drops killed them. Overall at ODU, it was a successful day just for the amount of fans that were there. What a great whiteout, seeing that stadium full of white shirts. I know this year they're looking to stripe the stadium. So it was just overall not the result we wanted with 38-14, obviously, but it was pretty good excitement for the first time a Power 5 school coming. Everything went off without a hitch. There were no major problems other than the scoreboard. You know what? Let's take a little bit closer look at this game with Brian Parsons, anchor reporter from Wavy TV 10 and Fox 43. Brian also works on the Coach's Show. Brian's on the Monarch Asylum again. Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Dave. Great to be back on the Monarch Asylum.
Thanks for coming on again. And just for a real quick little break of news, I know you were on assignment earlier today checking out the new scoreboard at the basketball at the Constant Center.
It looks fantastic. $1.9 million HD LED scoreboard with the LED ribbons throughout the arena. I mean, it was awesome. And Karen Barefoot, the Lady Monarchs head coach, came in, and you know, for the first time that anybody can remember, she was actually speechless. And that's saying something about Karen Barefoot. She's never lost for words. But it looks great. I mean, they got 13 years out of the old one, so time to move up into the HD age. I thought it was awesome. You saw some of the pictures, right?
Yeah, and that looks similar to the one that the Florida Panthers have down here. It's like a complete wrap around. You can have really a continuous picture around the whole thing, and no real, like, you can't really recognize the corners or edges.
I told Debbie White that they should, you know, maybe like a big road football game, put it on the screen and have people come in. And then she said, yeah, and how about when we make the NCAA tournament, we could put that game on the screen and have people come in too. So.
No, that's a good point. All right, let's talk about this game. Of course, we all know everyone was excited all week for NC State coming to town, and I figured the Monarchs had a lot on their plate with, first of all, an upset NC State team for how they played against Old Dominion last year. They lose 38-14. And to me, Brian, it was just one of those games when I kept waiting for that break. You know, when you have to beat a big team, you need like a big punt return or a timely interception or fumble. And like, they just never got it the whole game.
They didn't. And I think one of the key things was there are a lot of dropped passes. Because obviously, NC State was keying in on Ray Lowry, 8-9 in the box. So, you know, ODU had a lot of third down plays, a lot of third down drops, and they too many three and outs. And then NC State dominated the time of possession and doubled up on plays, and it was just it was kind of frustrating. But Shuler Bentley did have a really good drive in the second half when he hit Jonathan Duhart for the touchdown. That was a good drive, a lot of passes, a lot of crisp passes. Wilder, after the game, said that was the best drive that Bentley's had in his three games yet. But just frustrating that they couldn't get the run game going and the drop passes. And like you said, no big punt returns, no big plays. I thought when they made it 28-14 after the Duhart touchdown, there was an NC State guy next to me shooting. I elbowed him and I said, "Here comes the onside kick."
I could see that.
But they didn't do it. It's they were overmatched, but it didn't feel as bad as the Marshall loss last year. I'll say that much.
Oh, I was at that Marshall game, and you're right. That Marshall game was, you know, they couldn't do anything right. But, you know, more specifically, NC State, like you said, they doubled them up. Time of possession, 40 minutes State, 20 minutes for Old Dominion. Plays, total plays, 44 for ODU, 79 for NC State. And, you know, when you have a game like that, I know you hear those numbers, it's basically doubling up. The defense is going to wear down in the second half. For as valiantly as they played, they wore down.
Yeah, was they didn't get any favors from the offense. You know, three and out, and defense right back on the field. I thought the defense did, I mean, eye test wise, they played pretty well. I mean, compared to what we've seen in the past few years. I mean, TJ Ricks, the linebacker, the junior linebacker, is a beast out there. I don't know if you really kind of singled him out when you were watching, but man, that guy's a player. And they again, as far as NC State's defense, they had two defensive tackles that were clogging up the middle that were just monsters. And, you know, ODU's got a pretty big offensive line, but they just couldn't get anything going. What was it, -3 yards rushing overall?
-3 yards as a team. Ray Lowry, 11 carries, 15 yards.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And like you said, the drops were an issue. They were 3 of 12 on third down. Depending by the numbers you count, I counted read 5 drops, I read 7 drops, so somewhere around 6 drops, 3 in the first half for Washington, you know, which, like you said, those are drive killers. And, you know, one thing I've been reading lately, as some people comparing, we got to start this Bentley, comparing Shuler Bentley to Taylor Heinicke, and can we just end that stuff right now?
Completely unfair. Unfair. His third game as a college football player, he's playing NC State from the ACC. Taylor Heinicke, you know, cut his teeth playing, you know, Massachusetts and, you know, the Rhode Islands of the world. So big difference in competition there. You got to give Shuler Bentley some time here. I mean, there was a lot of drops. He was, what, 11 of 23, 150 yards, threw for a couple of scores. One was all Ray Lowry, though. The Baby Bull, by the way.
You like that nickname, huh? You like it?
I'm going to try to squeeze it in. I meant to do it on Saturday in the highlights, but I forgot. We were under the gun.
Yeah, when I talked to him last week, he had a little chuckle at the end. I know he didn't say he liked it, but he didn't say he didn't like it. So I'm going to stick with it.
I like it. He looks like a kind of a bull out there running. The feet are always moving. I mean, yeah, I like it. We'll try to make it stick.
Nice. I like it. Well, listen, just to continue on Bentley, you're right. He was 11 of 23, 151 yards. But let's say out of those 6 drops, let's say 3 of them are caught. All of a sudden, he's now 14 of 23. Add another 30, 40 yards on there. Yeah. And you're talking a 200-yard game, you know, close to over 60%, close to a 60% completion percentage. And, you know, for what they want him to do, that is pretty much the game.
And as far as Old Dominion with the 3 and outs that they had, NC State had some crucial third down conversions in that game, multiple. I mean, one of them, the running back, Matthew Days, or first of all, the quarterback, Brissett, was tied up. It looked like he was going to get brought down for a sack. He unloads it to Days, the running back, who put not one, but 2 ankle-breaking juke moves on his way down to a 20-yard gain for a first down. So, you know, it was just one of those, it was a clean game, I'll say that. ODU, no turnovers and no penalties.
First time ever in school history. And that is really ridiculous. And that goes to show you, like, you look at the stat sheet, if they could have somehow found a way to balance out that time of possession and, like you said, keep a drive or two going. Listen, I'm not saying they're going to win, you know, because I still think, I don't know if ODU had 30 points in them, and I think they needed at least 30 points to win this game. But maybe this game is 38-28. Maybe it's 35-25, you know, and that's a big difference.
And the last touchdown that NC State scored was a garbage touchdown within the last couple of minutes that, you know, that didn't even really matter. So, yeah, it's, you know, I didn't expect Old Dominion to win, and I think the game kind of went as expected. And a tough one coming up on Saturday, man. Appalachian State's already a 7.5-point favorite.
Oh, no, I noticed that. And here's my one concern. Let's spin it forward to that game a little bit. I don't know too much about Appalachian State. I do know they have 20 starters back from a 7-5 team. A team that plays hard. Is there kind of a blueprint now? Not that everyone has the manpower or the personnel NC State has, but is there a blueprint for how you beat Old Dominion? Like, stack the box, focus on Baby Bull, keep him contained, and then make Shuler Bentley beat you.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. I think, make the freshman quarterback with very little experience beat you. And this is great learning experience for Bentley. And this, you could argue, this is a must-win game. They're 2-1. If you get this win, you're at 3. Let's just say they beat Charlotte, which they probably will. Charlotte gave up 42 first quarter points to Middle Tennessee.
Wow.
So if they could beat App State, they beat Charlotte, you're at 4 wins. Basically, they're probably not going to beat Western Kentucky. They're not going to beat Marshall. That means you've got to split with the Florida schools and split with UTSA and UTEP to get to the six bowl wins. And I don't think they're going to beat both Florida schools. I don't think they're going to beat UTSA and UTEP. So they need to split those, beat App State, beat Charlotte, and there's your 6 wins. That's your best-case scenario.
No, you're right. Well, there's one thing I know about ODU, too. There's going to be a game that they probably shouldn't win that they will win. They seem to find a way of doing that at least once a year. The question is, can they avoid losing that one game? You know, well, the thing is, there's no game. They're probably – I mean, are they really going to be favored, like, by significant amount in any of these games going forward? Probably not more than 3 or 4 points, I'd imagine, or even 2 or 3.
They'll be big favorites over Charlotte.
Okay, that'd be the only one. So that'd be the one they're supposed to win, but everything else is really a pick 'em.
I think so. I mean, you have UTEP coming in, and who is it? FAU comes in.
Yes, Florida Atlantic heads up there, and then you're down here, FIU.
FIU, and then at Texas San Antonio, who has looked pretty decent in some of the games they played against Power 5 schools. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting season. It's not like, you know, some of these CAA games back in the day where you could chalk up to wins. I mean, it's tough to win an FBS college football game.
No, and it's just, you know, and I've always joked that, you know, I've had a hangover after having one too many Heinekens, and I think ODU's having a little Heineke hangover from the last couple of years. But, you know, we're adapting well, and I don't know, it's definitely going to be interesting to watch going forward, because I know what Bobby Wilder has said, that he said this before the season, that he needs 4 or 5, maybe 6 games to see where this team's at. Well, they've got 3 under his belt, so he knows in about two or three more games, he's feeling this team should hit their stride.
I really thought the offensive game plan against NC State was pretty vanilla too. I mean, there wasn't the usual Bobby Wilder, you know, trickery that you've seen in the past. There was that one play where Bentley threw to, I think it was low, threw it 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Oh yeah,
did you see that play?
Bit of a drive killer on that one. They did that one a little bit deep.
I don't know what was going on there, unless the plan was for him to throw it, but the defense was right on top of it.
Well, one thing I look forward to going forward on this game is I still think, I said it before the season started, I don't think Bobby Wilder completely knows what this offense is going to look like. I think they need to keep Vincent Lowe on the field. They got to, you know, he's, Ray Lowry called him, compared him to Darren Sproles. He said, that's our Darren Sproles. You know, I would like to see this week, I like it when teams come out with like a base run personnel and then you split them 5 wide, you know, just to throw that wrinkle out there. And, you know, maybe that can jumpstart Shuler a little bit, get him, you know, get the defense on their heels saying, wait a second, we haven't seen this yet. So I think Brian Scott, OC Brian Scott, has been pretty good about kind of dripping in some of those random plays. But I think they might need to do it more on offense.
I'm kind of curious as to why Blair Roberts hasn't been much of a factor so far. I mean, he's a big target. I'm surprised he hasn't been on the field as much.
Well, I mean, the team only has, there's only 40 completions. You know, they've only completed 40 passes looking at the numbers. He had 18 completions Eastern Michigan, 12 against Norfolk State, and 11 against NC State. So I know the receivers cut a lot, so there's a lot of balls to go around. The problem is they run the ball, what was it, I saw 65% of the time? So
right.
The passing game is just, I don't know, it'll be interesting going forward because I think teams are going to put it on Shuler, and we'll have to see how ODU can adapt.
Yeah, the passing game is going to have to open up for success to come, because, you know, teams are going to key in on the run, and when they do that, you know, it should open up the pass, and, you know, like we were saying, you know, make Shuler Bentley beat you, and we'll see what the kid's made of. He's a freshman. Keep in mind, he's a freshman. 3 college football games under his belt.
Oh, no, absolutely. All right, well, Parsons, Brian Parsons, thank you much from NBC, from Wavy TV 10, Fox 43. And, Brian, where can when can people watch the Coach's Show?
The Old Dominion Football Show every Friday night at 10:45 on Fox 43. And then immediately afterwards, it will be on Wavy.com. So you can watch all the episodes, past, present, and future on Wavy.com.
All right, Brian, thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Take it all, take it in, take up all the thoughts of what we've been. Take a look, hesitate, take a picture you could never recreate. Write a song, make a note, for the lump that sits inside your throat. Change the lock, change the scene, change it all, but can't change what we've been.
Back here in the Monarch Asylum podcast. Very excited for the next guest we have with us. Old Dominion junior linebacker, TJ Ricks, the leading tackler on the team. TJ, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. I want to talk to you a little bit about that last game. I know a lot of fans and a lot of players were excited about that last game. Didn't go exactly as planned. When you look at the tape, what kind of sticks out in your head?
Third down conversions. On the first drive, they were 4-for-4 on third down, and we were doing good on first and second down. We just got to finish on third down and get off the field, get the ball to our offense.
What do you think? I know everything I hear about is how young the defense is and how young this team is. What do you think about, what do you think that those young guys learned playing in a game like that?
The Power Five Conference, they were big. The linemen were big and fast. The skill players were big. I guess that just gets them used to the speed and strength of the college football. We're going to go into conference play soon, and I think I'll prepare them well for conference play.
Could you see the size difference? Because I know a lot of times, you know, people always talk about the speed of the game, but I'm always more impressed by the size of the game. But it seems like you have guys that could match up with them, and so, like, it wasn't as big a size difference as you guys have seen in the past.
Yes, sir. I guess it was just NC State's O-line last year and this year, they were bigger than the line that we played during the conference, so I guess that just had a factor of game.
I keep hearing how this defense is better. You've been there. You're a veteran on this team. You've got 2 years playing experience. This is your third. How do you see it better? How has it improved?
The young guys that played last year, like Justice, we know the defensive schemes better. We know each other better. We know, like, our strengths and weaknesses for each other. We know how to help each other out. We know that we can trust each other on the field. We just know all our assignments. We watch film together. We practice during the off season, doing 707s, and we just build a camaraderie that's keeping us close right now.
What about your group specifically, the linebackers? You know, they do talk about the youth on this team, but you do have some veteran experience with yourself, with Martez Simpson and Shadow Williams back there. You know, what do you see from your group specifically?
I see that we're deeper than we've been in the past, so we can keep half first guys out there. We've just been working hard on the off season, working on hands, keys and reads, gaps, just being physical.
What about the communication between that group? I mean, is that something? I mean, obviously the linebackers more than anyone need to talk and be on the same page. How do you work with that, with the communication between those two other guys when you're on the field?
We just talk to each other on the field. If we see a pull and somebody else doesn't see it, we just yell pull so they know to get over top. When we see somebody about to crack back somebody, we yell crack so he doesn't hurt our guy. When we see a receiver going across the field, we yell cross to let them know that they're coming across their way. So that's types of ways we communicate with each other.
I do have to ask you the same question I asked Vellante Mischer earlier in the year. Do you feel like one of the old men on this team? Because I keep hearing about how young it is, and when I look at your profile, you know, you've got experience. When I keep reading all about how these guys have their first game ever, their first sack ever, their first tackle ever, I look at your bio, and you've been playing for several years. You feel like one of the old men?
Oh, yes, sir. I feel like I've been here for a while. A lot of new faces. Yeah, I definitely feel like one of the old guys.
Do the new guys, do they pick on you at all about that? All right, that's good. I want to do a little name recognition where I'm going to give you a player name or a coach's name, and you just give me a sentence. You tell me the first thing that comes to mind when you hear this person's name.
All right.
Shadow Williams.
Shadow Williams is electrifying. He's crazy. He's just a wild player.
How is he crazy?
He just does this, like, during practice, before the game, he just does his battle cry, I guess. And he just moves around the field. It's just ferocious.
So he just, like, screams? He does, like, this, like, this yell or a lion's roar or something like that?
He does, like, a, I want to say it's, like, an Indian tribe call, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does he do that in the locker room or actually on the field before the game?
He does that almost everywhere.
Oh,
no. Locker room, practice,
When you're at Chipotle ordering food, when you're in the line getting food, I got you. Next name, Martez Simpson.
I'd say Martez Simpson is one of the old guys on the defense, the old man on the defense.
Do you pick on him about that?
Yeah, we all pick on him. His buddy from JUCO, Rich, he calls him Pawpaw.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, next name, O'Shane Zimenez.
So Shane Zimenez is a freaking nature. He came in about 210, 215, his redshirt year, and came back this offseason 245, 250. He's a very gifted athlete.
All right, next name, defensive coordinator Rich Nagy.
He's like probably our head man on defense, our boss, I guess. He wants everything to be right. He yells at us, but it's all in good intentions to make us a better defense.
Last name, Bobby Wilder.
Bobby Wilder is head man in charge. He wants everything done perfectly, and we try to do whatever we can to do it for him.
All right, last question for TJ Ricks, number 47 for the Monarchs. What does this defense need to improve? You got one more game before conference play, and we all know those games count double. So what do you think this defense needs to do to improve in this last non-conference game against App State?
Eliminate mental errors, know our assignments, and win on third down, get off the field.
Well, TJ Ricks, thank you very much for your time. We'll keep an eye out for you again on this game against App State. Good luck this week, and maybe we can talk to you again in the future.
All right, thank you.
We're back in the Monarch Asylum podcast. Very excited for the next guest we have with us, Bruce Stewart, Senior Associate Athletic Director for the Old Dominion Monarchs. Bruce, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, David?
I'm doing great. Thank you for the time. First thing I got to ask you is, I know how much work goes into getting a school like NC State to come to Old Dominion, but what was NC State for week like for you last week, for you and your crew? Because I know how much work goes into getting a school like that to come to Old Dominion.
Yeah, NC State was certainly one that I was targeting. I actually looked at a lot of the schools within our backyard. I kind of put a compass on the city of Norfolk and then drew a radius of about 350 miles from us and threw out a big net. And lo and behold, one of those schools was NC State. The conversation really started when we were transitioning from the CAA into FBS and going through that transition year in 2013. In that year, we had to play a number of Power 5 conferences. Probably half our schedule was Power 5 conferences and the other half were FCS. And through those conversations, I was able to strike up a conversation with Chris Kingston, who's now the athletic director at Bowling Green, and of course with Debbie Yao there, and kind of worked out a deal in which we would play a home and home, which certainly this past weekend was very historic for us of actually hosting our first Power Five school here in Norfolk.
And other than the result, of course, 38-14, a pretty successful week and pretty successful, you know, first trip by a Power Five school to Norfolk.
I would say it was exceptional. The buzz in this community, outside of maybe the opening game down in 2009, it certainly rivaled that, and our kids really responded very well to the community support that we've had here since kicking off.
What do you think, getting a little inside football on how, when you build a schedule, what do you think is the most difficult thing about building a football schedule that maybe the fans don't really know about?
Well, I can tell you there's a lot of different criteria that you're evaluating. It's not as simple as just getting your yellow book out and just calling schools. I think in my analysis, it may be about five things that I look at. Especially in Conference USA, it's much different than being in the CAA when you had, you know, the bus trips to JMU, Richmond, and William Mary's of the world. Now we're going everywhere from Texas to Mississippi down to where you are down in Florida, and that's being routine. That's our routine. So right now, you know, my priorities are probably looking at proximity to our campus. And that goes back to the compass analogy. Style of play is something else I look at. Whether your team is a spread team, if it's a traditional IBAC, which are becoming more and more like the endangered species, or for that matter, is an option team. I certainly, over time, have been able to have a better appreciation for the types of athletes and the schemes in which we are successful going up against. And so that is a part of my criteria that I look at. Other things I look at are like recruiting area. We have some very fertile recruiting bases in different parts of the country, especially up and down the eastern corridor here, that I will look at programs that make sense within those regions. Also taking into account our local market. We have a lot of strong military influence here. So the teams as of Navy, Army, the service academies are certainly of interest to our fan base, as well as, I can't forget, with the college football playoffs, strength of schedule has really come into play as far as making some evaluations on who we will play and who we will not play.
I find it interesting you talk about recruiting area. Does it help? I know Bobby Wilder has mentioned this too. Do some of these other teams want to play in Norfolk because it's such a fertile ground for high school football recruits?
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody from Ohio State, and we actually, Ohio State has a couple players from this area, the national championship team, and then Penn State actually had a huge camp here where I think there wasn't a piece of grass that wasn't being utilized on our campus when we hosted that Penn State ODU camp here this past summer. And then no doubt about it, like NC State, they certainly came with a caravan of cars for their coach to jump in as upon their arrival and catch some of the Friday football games and stuff of that nature before they played us on Saturday. So it is a carrot and it is an advantage that we have here in attracting Power Five conferences to Norfolk.
How much influence or input does Bobby Wilder have in a situation? Are there teams that he wants, or do you, you know, because I find it interesting you talk about the style of play is important when you're trying to get a team to come here.
Yeah, I mean, there are, I would say it is a collaborative effort. It's probably a lot of discussions that take place, and it's a very fluid process as well. I can tell you when we made the jump from the CAA to Conference USA, our initial strategy was probably playing two home and home games against members of the Group of Five, the G5. probably one member out of the Power Five, and then an FCS opponent. Okay, and that was going to be our non-conference portfolio, so to speak. But just like, you know, I don't know, Dave, how you, you know, work your stocks, but just like stocks, they change. We change our portfolio. And when, you know, the college football playoffs came about, our goals have changed. We certainly, first and foremost, want to be the, you know, conference champion. You can't get that done without looking at the opponent that's on your schedule. So it's a week by week. But hopefully you get to become a conference champion. Hopefully after a conference champion, you're being able to get into a bowl game. And we are in Conference USA associated with bowl ties and with seven great bowls in great locations. And then on top of that, you really are trying to focus in on being the best of the rest. If you study a little bit about Boise State and for us, you know, and Marshall and our conference were really heavily talked about getting that slot into this past year was to Fiesta. But as you're aware, that will change between the Fiesta, the Cotton, or the Peach Bowl, whichever one is not associated with the playoff semifinals. That's really our objective. And when you take that objective and that approach, I don't know if we can continue to do the model that I just explained. It may be tweaked a little bit where we might not be playing the FCS opponent on an annual basis. And I know some conferences like the Big Ten and others have taken the approach where they've been mandated not to do that. But as I kind of look through my crystal ball, I think we will be very selective when we play FCS opponents and try to really make our non-conference schedule very attractive from a strength of schedule as well as a competitive standpoint.
Now, I know down here covering some of the Florida schools, a lot of people, there's always a lot of conversation about how the big schools like to schedule easy non-conference games. Does ODU's success, I mean, the fact they've never had a losing season is a big point of pride, at least for me, when I talk about the program. Does ODU's success hurt it at all? If like maybe a big team sees that ODU is, you know, is maybe a better team than they'd want to play early in the season?
You know, I think one of the things that Bobby and myself and in conjunction with Wood Selig, the three of us are very big on putting our program and our student athletes in the best position to be successful. So from a scheduling standpoint, you are trying to create a culture of winning. And then once you have a, and I think we've established that, I certainly would hope to think so with our records over the year, with our worst record being 6-6 this past year in our full fledged FBS schedule. I'll take that, trust me.
And we all did. And it was an exciting 6-6 if there can be such a thing.
Yeah, I'm not going to name the other programs out there, but there's a lot of programs out there that have a ton of history that would have loved to end up being 6-6 this past year that or were on the outside looking in. But that sense of confidence, once you get that, then I think you have opportunities to take it to the next level. And I think speaking about NC State coming here, that is essentially demarcation that we're taking the training wheels off, and it's time to continue to grow and ascend. And I feel very poised about where we are going. And as you look a little bit out into our future scheduling, I mean, we have a 7-game series with Virginia Tech starting in, you know, 2017-18. So that's a 7-game series with them. We got North Carolina home and home. We have a Wake Forest home and home. We've already played the likes of you know, members of the Big Ten previously on the road at Maryland. We've been in the SEC. We've played at Vanderbilt. I am feeling very good about where the program is headed from that standpoint.
I know the one talk, and Coach Wilder has talked about it too, with UVA. What's it going to take to get UVA on the schedule? Is that just more of a matter of when it's going to happen, more of if?
Yeah, I think, you know, the challenge with scheduling is done so far in advance. And everyone has very few slots each year to fill, and you want to make sure you reach that appropriate balance. So it's not that we have not engaged UVA, and it is more of a fact that we certainly need to continue to have conversations and figure out respective dates and years that make sense for both programs. There is a thing so-called of overscheduling, and you don't want to get into that as well. That could be very detrimental to your program.
And I think then you have to be opportunistic, because from what I understand, that's what happened with NC State. They kind of had an opening, and you pounced in there.
Yeah, you know, that was 2013 was a very unique year, and you know, the NC State situation presented itself, and you're absolutely right. I felt that at that time in our development, it was probably more imperative to try to structure a home and home situation than to just take a guarantee money. So, you know, as we move forward, I will tell you philosophically, we'll continue to look for home and home situations every once in a blue moon, once maybe every 4 years, give or take. There may be a guarantee game that was slid in there. But as I indicated, I kind of laid out maybe the criteria that is a part of the evaluation. And if all those boxes are checked, it's a kind of a no-brainer for me.
Oh, absolutely. We're with Bruce Stewart, talking with Bruce Stewart, Senior Associate Athletic Director at Old Dominion. Bruce, you're in your sixth year, and of course, ODU football has been around for 6 years. Obviously, I have to think that's a big reason why you took this job. Was that one reason you took it? Just because you look at how much change the campus has gone through and the athletic department has gone through. It's been a pretty historic and exciting 6 years for Old Dominion.
Yeah, let me just go back a little bit. Before Old Dominion, I was at Coastal Carolina University. I had the fortune of starting a football program there from scratch in 2003. And in my first 4 years there, we went 6-5, 10-1, 9-2, 9-3. And in 2005, JMU was the number one team in the country. They came to Coastal Carolina University, and we upset them there in Conway, South Carolina, only to fall the next week to a program by the name of App State, which so we lost to them in 2005. And then we lost to App State again in 2006 in the FCS playoff. So it's kind of ironic that we're having this conversation today as we have App State just around the corner. But going to my point there, things at Coastal were trending in a very positive manner. And when I left Coastal to come to Old Dominion to do this again from scratch, people kind of were scratching their heads. But I saw so much potential here in Old Dominion. You got 1.7 million people here in your backyard. There is a wonderful sense of diversity, not only in the community, but within this campus. The leadership here is, when I talk about that, from the university president to the board of trustees to those individuals who are our best donors, is unbelievable. It really is a unique situation. You already alluded to that your backyard already has a plethora of excellent student athletes. There was a significant financial backing and support level that was undeniable. It actually made my decision kind of bittersweet because I certainly enjoyed my time at Coastal, but I just felt the opportunity here was too good to pass up. And so, yes, I did start from scratch again. But as I, you know, sit on the phone with you today, and I look back over the past 6 years, 9-2, 8-3, 10-3, 11-2, 8-4, 6-6. It's been pretty good. And jumping from FCS independent to the CAA, winning, you know, a championship, you know, in our second year of existence there, and then transitioning this FBS as an independent, then going to a full Conference USA schedule last year, and this year being bowl eligible. I mean, it's been quite a ride, and I can't imagine what the future has in front of us. But I'm like I said, I'm optimistic that there's still some special moments ahead of us.
No, I know when I talk about the program, to me, one of the big things, it's a top 40 market, you know, and that just opens so many doors for what you can do down the road when you're in that top 40 market. As someone who works in the media, I know the importance of that top 40 market. Last couple questions for you, Bruce. I do have to ask you about, I know that you've done a lot of work with the Powhatan Sports Complex, and there's always talk about a future stadium. Do you expand Forman Field? Do you build something new? Where are we at right now? I know that an architecture firm has been contracted to do some research, but how does that look going forward? Because as beautiful and as historic as Forman Field is, a 20,000 seat is just not going to cut it, you know, in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now the one thing that we did at the very beginning in starting our program here in 2009, we did our homework. We did our due diligence. We made informed decisions, not decisions based off emotion. So you got to kind of take the fan component out of it, so to speak, and really look at things from with a critical eye. And we are have hired one of the best, in my estimation, in Populous to come in to assist us in this analysis. And we are actively this week we'll be looking at getting some market survey research out to our fan base, and I'm looking forward to analyzing the data that comes back. And we'll take that information and continue to build upon that to make sure we make the most informed decisions for this university and our community.
Nice. That was good quarterback talk you gave me there. I like it. But I'll take it. But I know that's probably a question you get a lot anyways. Well, Bruce, I can't thank you enough for your time. It was very, very informative. Especially when you talked about the five criteria you look for bringing in a team. I think, I found it very interesting. So thank you very much for your time.
No, I thank you. I enjoyed being on, and don't be a stranger. Love to talk about anything else that you may have when it comes to Monarch Nation Athletics.
I appreciate it, Bruce. All right, we'll see you in Miami when we get down here. I'll bring a Cuban coffee for you.
All right, thank you.
Good stuff there on the other side with Bruce Stewart, Associate Athletic Director at Old Dominion. Very interesting stuff. All right. Thanks for another episode. Episode 4 of the Old Dominion Monarch Asylum podcast. So let's look what we learned today. Well, from Brian Parsons, I learned that the new scoreboard at the Constant Convocation Center is pretty awesome. Got to love it when you have new state-of-the-art and equipment and when you have a university willing to drop that much money into the scoreboard. Was it $17 million? That's pretty nice. From TJ Ricks, I learned that Shadow Williams likes to scream a lot, and he does some kind of Native American chant, and he'll do it almost anywhere. So look for him on the field, and maybe you'll see him doing it. Look for him in the hallways of school or walking through the mall. He might even do it. And that they also call Martez Simpson Papa because he's, I guess, one of the older players on the team. From Bruce Stewart, I learned, like I said, once again, a very informative interview. I learned there's five criteria for what Old Dominion looks for when they bring an opponent into Norfolk. One, proximity to campus, like NC State. I know NC State was excited to come here. The coach, a bus ride only 3.5 hours away. Two, the style of play, which I thought was very interesting. They try and bring opponents that play a certain style of play that ODU has been successful against. Three, the recruiting area, the recruiting areas they'd like to crack into. They'd like to get those teams here. Local market desires was number 4, possibly a Navy or Army scheduling down the road. Navy might be tough because of how lock solid their non-conference schedule is, but how awesome would it be to have Navy, the midshipmen, come to Norfolk for a game?
That would be incredible. And finally, strength of schedule. It's nice and exciting to hear that ODU has to start to think about that for an entrance to those bigger bowl games and down the road. And just, you know, because that's kind of how college football is now. You can't schedule the softies all the time. So I like that ODU is trying to get the tough big boys in there, trying to build a name for themselves. All right, looking forward to this week, Appalachian State. Like we had said with Brian Parsons earlier, I don't know much about this team. I just know that they returned 20 starters, so they have some experience. They are a tested team. No one overlooks Appalachian State either, too, especially since they beat Michigan in the Big House, even though that was, you know, a while ago. You know that this team plays hard. ODU, as of this taping, 7.5-point underdogs, which, I don't know, I don't like being a home dog. I don't like it. I know ODU usually plays tough, so I know that'll be some motivation that Bobby Wilder may use on his team, that they are not being picked to win at home. I think some of the problems that plagued them last week against NC State are going to be gone. I really think they got a little overhyped for that game, even though they you know, played well at times. They just couldn't really get anything going. I think they were so hyped up to try and get that first win against a Power 5 school and have it be in their first Power 5 school visit to Norfolk, that they were a little overhyped. So I think they're going to come down a little this week and kind of be a little more businesslike and get to work. Unfortunately, we talked about it before, and I've got to mention it again. I think the more we go into this series season, the success of this offense is going to fall more and more on Shuler-Bentley's shoulders. I'm a little afraid that I think NC State, now granted, a lot of people don't have the athletic ability the athletes at NC State has, at least left of the remaining teams on ODU schedule. But I believe that the template is out there. The blueprint is stack the box, stop the run, make late Ray Lowry, Kayshon Strong, make all those guys really work for their yards, and put the focus of winning the game on Shuler-Bentley on his throws. Now, he has shown the ability to make the plays when they're needed. He has checked out of plays. He has audibled and made the right plays. And, you know, he does have 3 touchdowns on the year, 1 interception. His numbers aren't amazing, but they're not terrible. But he's going to need help from his wide receivers. And once again, which one is going to show up? We talked about it a couple weeks ago with Blair Roberts. There's really no super stud wide receiver on this team, but a lot of very good receivers. Possibly the best receiver is David Washington, and he's going to need to have a better game than he had last week. He's got to catch the ball when he's there. They all have to catch the ball. ODU is at a point where they can't give away plays. Not like they could years ago when you had that high-powered offense and you were a little more physically dominant than the teams you were playing. ODU, with their youth, it's good youth, with their youth, they are not going to be physically dominant. They're not going to be more physically dominant than any team they face the rest of the year. They will be as physically competent, but they won't be more so, other than maybe that Charlotte game. The other thing I'm looking forward to this game is, what's the new wrinkle that Brian Scott, the offensive coordinator, what's the new wrinkle he's going to put in the offense? Because he's about adding a little more each week, adding a little more each week. Does he need to add a little trickery, as we're used to seeing sometimes with an ODU offense? So what's he going to do? I'd like to see, like I said, some more Vincent Lowe out of the backfield. I like the what he brings to the offense. So I just don't know. I'm looking forward to that. And as far as the defense, I think just got to keep doing what they're doing. They've been a very solid unit all year. They've been playing under composure for most of the time, mostly thanks to that upperclassman leadership that you have from the Felonte Mishers and the TJ Ricks, who we talked to earlier in the show. So it's going to be a good game. 3:30 start. I know they're going to stripe the stadium. Looking forward to seeing that. I'm not really big on predictions because I really don't know much about Appalachian State. I do know about Old Dominion, but I think this is a game that ODU normally wins. And it's at home. They're going to be hyped. It's the last game before the conference schedule starts. So I think ODU wins this game somewhere in the 20s, though. 27-24, somewhere 28-21, something along that line. I just don't see the offense as high-powered enough to score consistently in the 30s right now. And I think the defense is going to have to make some timely plays and some timely turnovers. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of the Monarch Asylum podcast. Once again, follow us on Twitter, at ODU Asylum. Check out the Facebook page. I'm going to try and make that a little more interactive. And please spread the word. Spread the word. Share it with your friends. Listen to it on the – if you listen to it once, listen to it again on the way out to the tailgate. Like, try and time the shows to be just about an hour, which is a perfect time for the commute and setup. And if you have any questions, once again, please hit me on Twitter, at ODU Asylum. That's really the best way to get in touch with me. And if you're not on Twitter, it's 2015, people. Come on. It's time to get on Twitter. It's the information era. And that's really – it's a great way to stay in touch and a great way for up-to-the-minute information. And don't forget our Twitter contest, hashtag Monarch Asylum. Just tweet a picture of where you watched the ODU versus App State game. You don't have to be in the stadium. I mean, that might help. But most creative picture or picture that makes me laugh or whatever. Just my favorite picture wins a $25 gift certificate to Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters, home of some of the best coffee in Hampton Roads. Find them at lynnhavencoffee.com. They're located at the intersection of Great Neck Road and Shore Drive. And they're only open on weekends, though. They're affiliated with the Farmers Market, the Shore Drive Farmers Market. So once again, tweet your best picture of where you watched the ODU App State game. Use the hashtag Monarch Asylum, and you could win a $25 gift certificate to Lynn Haven Coffee. Now listen, I know a lot of people listen to this podcast, so we should have a lot of entries this week. Hey, what's better than free stuff? It takes you 5 seconds. So come on, people. Let's do it. Well, that's it for now. Episode 4 of the Monarch Asylum podcast is in the books. Go Big Blue, and let's do this again next week as we get ready for Conference USA play. Should be an exciting season. All right, take care, Monarch Nation. We'll talk to you next week.